This is Channel 1 Over. This is Channel 1 Over in the continuation of the talk with Tuck Mack out on his porch. Just him and me. He and I are there by ourselves. Thursday afternoon, the 2nd of April, 1970. Channel 1 Over. Channel 1 Over. Ms. Mack had gone to town. Now, this is Channel 1 Over. Continuation of the talk with Tuck Mack on his front porch. Thursday afternoon. For 2 hours and a half, Ms. Mack had gone to town, just him and me just sitting there on Saturday afternoon, the 2nd of April, 1970. It was cool. It's cool. Another one of those winters, dogwood winters, something like that. It was way past the dogwood winter. And I had the big Sony. I had the big Sony. I had the big Sony over there. And we taped 2.5 hours. Thursday afternoon, 2nd of April, 1970, this is Channel 1 Over, Channel 1 Over, Channel 1 Over, Thursday afternoon, 2nd of April, 1970, Channel 1 Over, continuation of the talk, Tuck Mack and me, just two of us there on his big porch, and the dogs out front. Ms. Mack had gone in to see the doctor. She'd gone into town, just him and me there, grandson gone home for a visit, and that was it.
Captain Gordon, I don't believe I've even heard of him.
Well, he lived all around there, Mickey. Nobody finally built him a little house down on just the side of the, across the street from the water plant. You know where Horace got his little garage now?
Yeah.
Two doors or three doors, three houses up. And he come out here and looked at him. He said, Tuck, I'm going to take a chance. And they were nice melons. They'd average 30 pounds of bell. He says, I'll give you 50 cents. And I'll take a load to Georgia. And when I get up there, he says, if I can sell them, he says, I'm going to call you. I want you to have another load picked by the time I get back.
Yeah.
Well, I kept him on the road about 4 days.
That is Captain Gordon?
Yeah. And he'd haul 300 melons on that truck at a time.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many loads he did haul. But then Clark Rollison come out here when it was halfway over, a little over, and he said, how much do you want for this patch of watermelon? I said, I don't know. Let's walk over and kind of estimate how many there is here. He said, hell, I don't want to do that. I'll give you $300 for it if you want to take it or leave it. I said, I done took it if you got it in your pocket. And I made about $1,100 off of taking all expenses out,
yeah.
Which was pretty good back then. Money was money then. It wasn't something like nowadays. You get it, and if you're buying the thing, you ain't got it.
Yeah. These but you did that truck farming too.
Yeah, and besides I planted my corn. You know, it's said, and I believe the old farmer used to work as much to feed his horse as he did his family.
Yeah.
That horse had to be fed three times a day.
Yes, sir.
And it took quite a little bit of feed.
When you was working the horse, it had to be fed.
Yeah. And when you laid by, then if you had a pasture or open field, after you gathered corn, you turn them in there. Well, God, there's more than that they could eat.
Yeah.
And I think it did them good, too, because it was a change.
Did you have to raise hay for them?
Yeah. Raise hay and pull fodder. You heard of pulling fodder, I reckon.
Yeah.
God, my last job. We had a boy. We planted six acres of roast-nailed corn to sell his roast-nailed. And the deal we had, what was left in the field, I got it.
Uh-huh.
And I fixed up the ground and planted, fertilized it, good, man, that thing come up growing. It was Norfolk Market. It was a prolific corn. So my daddy, he was old fashioned, like my daddy-in-law, like my daddy. And if a stalk of corn ever come up and it had a sucker on it, they thought you had to get that off, which is a mistake. But that year, this come up and it had a lot of suckers on it. And my son and dad-in-law and me, we went down there. It gotten the corn got up about that high and the suckers about that. We'd pull it off by armloads and lay it down and let it cure, then put it in the wagon, haul it to the house for the horses.
Yeah.
Well, we got a little over half done. And I said, hell, this is enough. I let it go. And a lot of those suckers made good ears.
Yes.
Well, when it come time to cut it, he had a truck. We cut a truckload. I think it's about 200 and some bushels. And he kidded north and he sent me a wild bag that wasn't worth hauling up there. So he come on back anyhow. And then all together we cut about 360 bushels off of us. And we hadn't started good.
Yeah.
And he says, well, the rest of it's yours. So the time come to full fodder, my dad and my aunt dropped me, we went down there. We get us 800 bundles of fodder off of it.
Yeah.
Which didn't hurt the corn. And we started getting it. I had a little old barn up there and I filled it up. And give my dad-in-law three or four loads. I didn't give it to him, he earned it helping me, you know.
Yeah.
So it was soft and I knew that we was gonna eat it up. And I got to thinking. And I'd shuck and shell 10 or 15 bushels and get down to Fairfield, have it ground in meal and half. And I'd bring it back here and we'd get out in pecks instead of a quarter of a peck, which meant a dollar a bushel.
Yeah.
Back in them times, by gosh, it come in handy.
Yeah.
And we eat cornbread about twice. And it was good, made out of that soft corn, you know.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I never tried it made out of that sort of corn.
Home ground meal, especially if you can get water ground meal. You see, when they grind it by water, it's ground slow. And a lot of these mills, the millers, they want to get through it in a hurry. And they don't take time, and it kind of goes through a heat, so to speak. But if you go there and you tell them you want half and half, well, you bring it home and put it in your sifter and you sift it, and your meal comes through. Then your husk and your corn, your grits, it stays in the sifter. You take that and you wash and wash and wash. But boy, when you get all that husk out and put it on and cook it done, you got something good to eat. There's no comparison in this grit you have. Yeah, I don't know what they do to it, but they take a lot of the corn taste out. And another thing, my mother used to cook big hominy. That's a whole grain. She'd put in a wash pot, a bushel, three pecks. Put a little lye in there. When it got cooked darn tender, she'd take it out. My dad-in-law planted this old Hickory King corn. So many kernels, it might be as large as my thumbnail. And they'd peel that husk off. And when you got ready to eat it, you could eat it just like that. Or she'd put it on in a pot and put a little milk and butter and season it, pepper and salt.
Now, she'd put that whole corn in the grain corn, shell corn, in the
wash pot.
Wash pot.
Uh-huh, and boil it.
And boil it.
Mm-hmm.
With a little lye.
Yeah.
And that got the husk off.
That made the husk come off. Yeah, some of them you can just take it like that, and the husk would slip off, and your corn kernel would stay.
Yeah.
Drop into your pan.
Well, you know, I used to have a taste for hominy.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't have a taste for it, it don't taste like anything.
Right.
But I always liked it.
It's big hominy. I did, too. Back then, I believe I could eat a quart.
Yeah.
And I've always liked cornbread. And my brother Tom next to me, when he was coming up, he wouldn't eat it. He said, damn it, it scratched his throat. And before he died, that's about all he wanted was cornbread.
Yeah.
I think a person's taste changes.
When did you start farming? Out here. You married in 22.
Yeah.
At that time, you was working mostly with cattle.
Yeah. And plowing and everything else. But whatever, just well, like I told you a while ago, whatever had to be done, we did it.
Oh, I see.
And old Lawrence Hall was a good big boy. And I started farming with old man R.H. Meade. Did you ever hear about him? Had the store that way, but we were got the store now.
No.
He was a turpentine man.
No.
Well, he was doing a little farming, and he had some old turpentine niggas that he could work for nothing, and
yeah,
made them trade in the store. And he got at me one day and let's farm something together.
Uh-huh.
I told him all right, but the first year we planted 3 sacks of beans. I made about $500.
Oh.
Clear. And then I had, when you plant your beans, the second plowing of them, you'd plant a row of corn in the middle,
yeah,
every other middle.
Yeah.
And what fertilized your beans didn't get, that corn got you, made a good corn crop.
Yeah.
And so I farmed with him second year, and I didn't make but $200. And the third year, I didn't make nothing. First plant, it was up large enough to work. And I went down there one year and it was cold as the devil. And I said, well, I'm going to start plowing and maybe it won't get too cold. My dad-in-law come down there and told me that if it's him, he'd take out and go down. He says, it's going to freeze. Well, I plowed on a while and it looked like it kept getting cold. And I said, damn, I believe I'll take him at his word, and I took out and went down there the next morning. It's like walking on the side of a cement walk, froze.
Yeah.
So I run in there and told old man and me, I said, get some more seed quick as you can. I got some, already had the fertilizer in the ground. I said, I'm going back and open up them rows, and as soon as you get the seed, I'll plant it over. We'll be as early as anybody, or early.
Yeah.
So he fooled around, he called old Callan. Gains when they didn't have this kind of seed we wanted. He called Plant City, I believe Kilgore had a seed store down there then. He said, Tucker, can't get him nowhere but Plant City. I said, well, go get him. He said, hell, I can't leave yet. I said, well, let me have the truck and I'll pay the gasoline bill and I'll go get him. Oh, they'll ship him up here tomorrow. And it was a week to the day till we got the seed.
Yeah.
Well, time we got them, everybody else had them.
Yeah.
And some of them got them before we did.
Yeah.
And all of us just come right in together, and the market wasn't no good and didn't make any money. So.
And you worked harder that year than you did any other?
Yeah, and didn't get but half of what I made.
Yeah.
I said, hell with that. I went in there and I told him, I just believe I'm through sharecropping. No, he said, just because we had a bad year, he said, let's double it next year. He said, we'll make more money. I said, no, I ain't going to do it. So I went down and got me 2 sacks of beans and planted them. And I bought my seed and fertilizer on credit.
Yeah.
And I come out, I had about $1,780 clear.
Yeah.
And I went there and told him about it. He said, well, he said, you might not have made my that much with me, but he said, you wouldn't have been risking as much. He said, you wouldn't have been out nothing but your labor. I said, I can't see it that way. And after that, I always farm myself. Oh, I had, like I told you, I had these niggas at Sharecrop. And then I went in that year with Miss Giggle. We picked 2,980 crates of beans. We didn't make $500 a piece clear that year. And I got sick and just left him tend to the peas and corn. I didn't get nothing out of it. I don't know what he got out of it.
I farmed a little after I got out here.
You did?
And we put in some beans. I farm a little bit with, you know the man, he lives up at Santa Fe Hill. Everybody knows him. And he had the first picking of beans. He made a little lot. And then he had a beautiful field that came in. The price went out, and he never even picked a bean.
Mm-hmm.
Never picked a bean.
Well,
beautiful bunch of beans like that, you know. The only thing he made on that year was 5 acres of cucumbers. And he just picked them things over and over.
Every other day.
Yeah.
I know about cucumbers.
Yeah. And took them over there to, I forget the name of those places up there, Butler, Lake Butler.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up there with him time too. And every picking, he made money on them. He made around $2,900, as I remember. And that's all he made that year on his, that early planting on cucumbers. The rest of it, he just lost.
I tried cucumbers and I tried squash.
We tried some sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
And everything went wrong. And you know the worst thing that went wrong is they sent him the wrong kind of sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
He bought his slips from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did, he got a variety that would come in the very first thing. There wasn't any good to eat much, but there's early. So, I thought then, Earl Hill, I thought then if he got messed up on those things, I'd better just stay out of it. Because he is an old timer. He had done it, see, all his life.
I had a few beans one time, and I picked 2 pickings and come out pretty good.
What was that you were telling me one time about, let me see, over there at Buddy Huff's, they were doing something and they put traps on the post to catch the hawk.
Oh, that was on a squirrel farm. You know, he's got I don't know how many acres out there. You go to Orange Lake and you turn back to the right. You know where Hickman is?
No.
Well, it's out there close to Hickman. He must have 300 or 400 acres out there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he don't only plant, I don't know what he was now. This has been years back.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. 10 or 15 years, anyway.
Yeah.
And he had quail out there. I mean, he had lots of quail.
Yeah.
And, of course, I was farming, and he was selling my stuff, and old B. Rogers, him and Buddy was big buddies, and I got to go down there 3 or 4 times to shoot quail. And that was the most wonderful thing. I didn't get so much kick out of shooting the birds. They were so darn gentle.
Yeah.
You up and down Central, the dogs would point, and the nigger would have to go in there and run the birds up.
Yeah.
And a lot of time they'd come out, and before you could throw your gun up, you'd be done it back down. And you wasn't allowed to shoot one on the ground. But we killed quite a few birds down there. Now, I enjoyed it, but it's not like going in the woods, you know, it's do or die.
Yeah.
And he had 5 different varieties of birds down there. Now, I can't name all of them. But
I didn't know there was 5 varieties.
Some of them is large, way large than the old wild quail we call them. He had some of them that was what they call pin rays. They wouldn't fly much.
Yeah.
But some of them would get up and go. And he had a nigger. Didn't do nothing but tend to those birds and fight hawks and possums and fox. And he'd have steel traps up on these high poles, you know, and the hawk would fly in that and light to spot those birds, and he'd light in that darn trap. And he'd catch him.
Yeah.
And he had a high-powered rifle. He'd go out there and shoot hawks where we could see them.
Yeah.
And this nigga always carried a shotgun to shoot possum or whatever would molest a bird. And then he planted feed down there for doves. And he'd have doves shoot.
300 acres, huh?
No, he didn't have. He had some in past. He had some cattle back there, too. And him and Reginald Johnson Well, Reginald had a irrigated field down there. He planted in beans or something and followed in corn, and he didn't gather corn, he just turned hogs and cows in there. And there was the most, as many doves in that little field as I was seeing. It was what, about 20 acres.
Yeah.
And there was 11 or 12 hunters down there. And the son-in-law and me, we went down there. And Beatty Rogers was down there. And Charlie John and old man John. And old man John was like I was. He couldn't hit them things too good. But seemed like they was flying just right that afternoon. And we started shooting at 1 o'clock. And 3 o'clock, something got wrong with my gun. And B wasn't there far from me. He said, hell, come over here and shoot mine. I said, no, I reckon I got a mess of birds. But we just picked them up, put them in our hunting coat, and some of the car was right there close. He put some in the car. Come out and Bob Bud, and he said, where you going to? I said, I'm going home. He says, if you got a mess of birds? I said, if the man catches me, I'll be in a hell of a mess. Come home and count them. We had 42 birds. And
now that was back 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, Buddy Huff, does he still do that?
He still hunts, yeah. Well, we can get a chance to go dove shooting or quail. He has that kind of, it's a hobby, and then he takes his big buddies out there, you know, his business associates, and
yeah,
lets them hunt. And
he raises quail.
Yeah.
Well, he'll have to have somebody to protect him.
Look after him, yeah.
Look after him.
Well, he's got all his fields posted, and he's got a family lives out there. I don't know what the man's name is that lives out there, but he had 4 or 5 bird dogs.
Yeah.
He had what they called a Eisenhower Jeep. He had in the back of the seat, he had the dog body back there, and then he had a seat up on top.
Yeah.
And if you was a mind to, he'd drive along there, and those dogs would point. He didn't work with 2 or 3 at a time, and he had some darn good dogs.
Uh-huh.
You shoot a bird down, you didn't ever have to go get him. The dog would go get him and bring him to you, or bring him to Buddy. He hardly ever bring you one.
Yeah. But is Buddy pretty good?
Yes, sir. He's a good shot. I believe he's one of the best dove shots I've ever seen.
Is that right?
And sometimes those things, I don't know, they'd get up and start flying straight like they ought to be. Do like that.
Yeah.
And you got to be darn good if you get hit one of those things.
Well, Buddy's been a part of this country then, hasn't he?
Yeah, you know, he was, when he was coming up, he was poor as anybody.
Yeah.
And he started working in the store with Bill Christie.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he got started out, but when he started out, it just looked like everything he touched turned to gold. Yeah.
Well, now you've known him all your life then down here.
Ever since I've been around Micanopy, yeah. He's got, had 2 or 3 brothers. One of them died here several years back. And I thought he was, Buddy's all right, but he's a businessman.
Yeah.
He'll help you, but he expects something back in return for it. And
but his other brother down there, the mechanic.
Yeah. I don't think he's ever accumulated very much.
No. But he's a nice fellow.
Yes, seems to me like, I can't remember his name, but he was in with Mr. Smith down in Ocala, had the Oliver Tractor Agency. And yes, we bought this old Oliver Tractor from Mr. Smith. And Huff was down there. And I believe after Mr. Smith went out, Huff took it over for a while. Then a fellow by the name of Avery took it over. He was out there on this side of town. And we'd go down there, and if we needed anything, if Mr. Smith didn't have it, he'd get it for you right quick.
Yeah.
And Huff was about the same way, but this little Avery, you'd go down there, and he didn't give a damn. He'd tell you, I'll order it for you, and I'd say, well, have it sent to Micanopy. You wait and wait and wait, and it never did come.
Well, does Buddy Huff fish?
I don't know whether he does or not. He must. He's got a big old speedboat back there.
Oh, I see.
I don't know. And he's got a little lake. I call it the pond. He calls it a lake out there.
Yeah.
And he's got it rained. He's got a 6-inch well out there. If it don't come rain enough, if the pond starts going down, he pumps the water in it.
Yeah.
And we went out that fish, and he made a mistake of planting his old winky pin or chinky pins in it.
Yeah.
One grows on land, the other grows in the water. I can't tell you which is which. But them things just took his pond.
Oh, really?
And then he had to start fighting them. Well, he's pulling the top of them always above the water. But shoot, time before they got rotten and out the way, they done come back up again. I don't know what he ever did do with it. He let us go out there 2 or 3 times fishing in there.
Well, he's one of the main fellows, has been for a long time.
And he's the backbone of McIntosh, you might say.
Yeah.
See, that's old man Bill Christian. Retired, put his son-in-law in there, Bill Wynn.
Yeah.
And Bill's a nice fellow. He accommodates you.
Well, now, Mr. Christian, he don't fool with the countryside anymore.
No.
He's down there at Ocala.
Yeah.
And he just got a big office and puts his money in General Motors.
Yeah. And,
now, Buddy Huff doesn't do that. He still takes a hand in the countryside.
Yeah. He has sharecroppers all over and got orange groves and cattle and
But Mr. Christian doesn't.
I don't think Bill Wynn even has any cattle or anything. It's just that store.
Yeah.
He helps look after the orange groves and things.
Yeah. What happened to Jim Taylor? Jim Taylor?
He died.
How far back?
Oh, 10 years, I'd say.
Well, now you worked along with him after you left Cap Bar and that crowd.
Not directly, but he was the head of the whole thing. And old man Jim Taylor, I got a nephew.
Well, now let's see. When did Captain Bar and his interest wind up? In the 30s, before the war? He's out of all the bars were out of commission by the World War II.
Yeah.
And the young fella, the one you call Bar, he'd gone to California.
Died. Old Dr. Watkins, I can't remember, but old man Bar died first, then Dr. Watkins, and then old Miss Bar.
Now Dr. Watkins is the one that had the commissary.
No, his boy. John Barr Watkins.
Yeah, John
Barr. That's hard to get that all straight.
Yeah.
Getting back to Mr. Christian, I went down there one day for something, I don't know what, and as always, if you go in the store and buy anything, it's like, do you want this charge or you want to pay cash for it? Don't ask if you want credit or anything. You want a charge or you want to pay cash for it? So I was down there one afternoon, and I'd been buying all my seed from Seminole and Ocala and fertilizer.
They have delivered?
Yeah. Well, old man Christian will too. Would then.
Would then.
And he said, Tucker, you've been having good luck farming. And he says, I got a different variety of seed. He says, I just believe it a little bit, Bill. He says, let me get you some of them in trial. I said, now, Mr. Christian, you know I've been buying my seed and fertilizer on credit. That don't make a bit of difference. How many seed do you want and how much fertilizer? And I told him, and he got them. Well, I never could see. It's when this Cherokee wax bean seed first come out. He got me a couple of bags of those. And I made a lot of beans and made pretty good money on them. Oh, I say good money, for back then it was good money. But I don't know whether it was a year or two after that, I had some beans up and I picked them twice. And they were pretty, they were fancy. And I did pretty good on them and got my seed and fertilizer back in a little oven. I was down there one day and I said, "Mr. Christian, them beans are ready to pick again and they're beautiful. What about the Margaret?" He says, "It looks awful dark." He says, "If it was mine, I wouldn't pick them." He says, "I'm not going to tell you what to do," but he said, "If it's mine, I just let them alone." And I got started in about, and I had 150 crates already bought and paid for. Damn, I'm going to pick them. I might get a few dollars. And I picked them, and it cost me just $160 to find out. I never got nothing out of them. And I told him about it. He said, "Well," he says, "you were doing what you thought was right." And this old man, M.J. Boyd out there, he told me a dozen times. He says, "If you've got cabbage in a thing and the market's down," he says, "you cut them and pick them and ship them just as quick as you can." He says, "By the time you get them together and get them to market," he says, "the market will probably be done going up." But that don't work that way all the time. When I was farming, the old man, maybe we had a bar from over at Hawthorne. He'd run a produce truck and he'd haul our beans. Most of them went to Buffalo, New York. Man, he didn't have, he had his bars was built like these cattle bodies. And first, four or five loads he hauled for us, nothing was never fed. Beans went in good shape. And then they started finding excuses. There'd be wind blowing. They'd claim that the truck going in the wind blowing and it would dry the beans out. Well, it couldn't possibly dry all of them out because it might get some on the outside or some on top, but those stacked down and no wind couldn't get to those beans. And then one time, old man made kind of me and we had 200 or 300 crates in a car. And the sand back of the car got lost. I said, "How in the hell could a car get lost on a railroad track?" Finally, we didn't get nothing out of it. They finally traced it up and missent it to some other place. They could have all kind of excuses.
Yeah.
Well, that's worse than me and you taking a deck of cards sitting down here playing poker.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
When you
start, so you got a chance.
Yeah. When you start off farming, you got to pay the other fellas price from start to finish.
Yeah.
Then when you get your stuff made,
he pays his price.
They know it's perishable. You got to do something with it.
Yeah.
It's no good. And a lot of worry and hard work in it too.
Now that, but the cattle. You worked with cattle before the Baileys come out here.
Yeah.
You worked with cattle all along, too?
The old man Barr had the first cattle out there in Assembly.
Oh. Cabin Barr?
Yeah. Well, he had, guessing about 300 head.
Oh.
And they weren't tame either, by Joe Poole.
Yeah.
And we'd pin some of them and butchered some and we'd try to get them up Martin brand twice a year.
Yeah.
He had the only brand I was seeing. Oh, that was me at that time. It was a double B. One was backwards, and one was the right way. They were made together.
Yeah.
And we put that on a menu cow. So after the old man got out the way, John Barr Watkins, he decided he was going to gentle those cows. Well, cattle was pretty cheap back then.
Now there's the boy.
Yeah.
Your age.
And he bought three different bunches of gentle cows to put in there with those wild ones to try to gentle them. Well, he wouldn't give us time, and we didn't know too much about cattle at the time. The outcome was all the rest of them went wild. So then he decided, by gosh, we'd put them out and get some good gentlemen, sure enough.
But he was calling to play.
Yeah. So,
and he didn't ask anybody.
No, he didn't. He didn't take no advice from nobody.
That's right.
And,
it's his money.
It was his money, his dad and granddad, and hell, it wasn't costing him nothing. We started in there butching those guys out, and he'd get contracts up in Gainesville, and as many as we could kill and butcher, he'd throw them in his car and take them, not all at one time, you know, but he'd take two or three, and they'd dress in them. Well, if we got a full of a young one, that one, we'd kill him too. And big ones, bulls, and old cows, anything that's that. And I don't know how many we did butcher out of there, but it got to where, at first, you could go and find a bunch and run in there and kill you one or two right quick. But at the last, it's just about like killing deer. You had to slip up on him or catch him out on the prairie and run upside of him with your horse and shoot him. We finally got them all killed out. I never will forget. Barney never did drink much whiskey. He couldn't drink much. He could take a half a pint and get drunk on it. He come out there one cool morning. And he said, Tuck, I'll give you a day's wages. $1 a head, I believe, for each cow you kill. He says, I want high as 10 if I can get them. Well, he is driving with the same old Dodge car. Joe Smith, he is the foreman then, the little boss man. And they parked over at where the pen is now. And went on. I went out there on the island. I got three right quick. And they had two niggas and another white fella coming behind us butchering. And I was just going on hunting. I killed six that day. And come back. He told me, he says, I got some whiskey. He says, I'm not going to give you any until you get through. And I said, all right. Come back, and him and Joe had gone, and I looked at Joe's car, and both headlights was busted out of it. And I said, but what in the hell happened? And I got to looking around, and then left me a bottle of whiskey in there. Well, I was satisfied. I come on home. I believe I let the other fella ride, bleed my horse, and I drove Joe's car home. The next day, I got it and come out. Oh, what the hell happened to your car? He said, Bar took two or three drinks and sat outside of a tree with a shotgun. He said, he waked up and that car was coming out. He shot both headlights. I said, God almighty, if I'd have done that. I said, you ought to have sent me to the bug house. He'd go out there in the woods in that old. He was a little old, bitty, short, fat fella.
Bar.
Yeah. He was. This is John Bar Watkins.
Yeah.
And we just, everybody called him Bar, so that's where I speak of. He'd go out there and hell, if it was 50 yards or 100 yards, if he saw a big steer, he'd stop him, he'd shoot him, and most of the time he'd kill him.
Yeah.
He was a good shot.
Yeah. He could at least shoot.
Yeah, and then that's where the work started in. You had to go get your butchering things and come back and butcher them.
Yeah. Well, you didn't need much equipment to butcher. You had to pull them off.
Had a block and tackle and a saw. And
what was a saw for?
There's a saw down his backbone.
Right.
You sawed him down right straight down the middle of the backbone, and then you quartered it in full quarter. Iron and full quarter. And my brother and me was out there one day, and he shot a pretty good sized deer down. And he says, all right, we was in a hurry, we had something else. He said, I'm going to see how long it takes us to skin this beef. We got the block up in the tree. From the time we started skinning, in 29 minutes, we had him loaded and ready to go.
29 minutes.
That's good for woods butchered. Now you take these professionals around these packing plants. Hell, it don't take them. No, they've got all the convenience and everything.
Yeah.
You see. But that's a damn good time.
Yeah.
Out in the woods butchering.
Goodness. Now, two of you?
Two of them, yeah.
What's this nigger's name? They always talk about him, you know. He could skin a cow in 6 minutes or something like that. What is that?
Live up here by Jim Carter's.
Irish bull.
I don't know how fast he could skin a cow. And I don't like to brag on a damn nigger, but he was about as clean a butcher as I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
Now, when he shot a beef down and bled it, there wasn't much blood left in it.
Yeah.
And he was just as clean, and he had the sorriest tackle that you ever seen.
Yeah.
Well,
they can get along with as little equipment.
You tell you how, a little old Model A coupe. And he'd butcher the biggest kind of beef and throw it in the back of that thing somehow and go to town with it.
Yeah.
And when, well, my dad's brother-in-law, Sam Smith, you probably heard people talk about, Buster Mountain's uncle. He was a market man and a butcher. And he'd always have to have a 38 rifle or shotgun with buckshot to kill a cow, you know.
Yeah.
Shoot, and last, oh, I don't know how long, 15 or 20 years, all we used was a 22 rifle. And of course, you know, when we was bushing up in the hammer, we used a big rifle.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you took a chance on a long shot or something like that.
Yeah.
But the last cows we'd been bushing, we'd have them in the pen.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't kill him the first shot, he couldn't go nowhere. He,
yeah.
He would keep on shooting.
Well, but you never, old man Jim Taylor, he never come out here.
No, only on a visit, so to speak. And I want to tell you something funny about him. He was been in the woods all his life.
Yeah.
And up in this hammock, there's thousands and thousands of, we call them possum haw trees. Well, they look just exactly like a plum tree.
Yeah.
And up there on the old underhill place where Jim Rand is at, there were some wild plums in that hammock. And they was big, they'd get to be that big. But God Almighty, you could let them get just so ripe, they'd be almost rotten. And they never did get sweet, they'd sour the devil. And old man Jim went up there one day and he said, Tuck, where's your mineral boxes? I said, we don't have any on the back end. Never did have till here 2 or 3 years ago. He said, well, you don't need them up there. And I said, why? He said, because there's something up there in the feed that those cows get, they don't need any salt or mineral. And he says, do those trees up there ever have many plums on them? I said, Mr. Jim, I don't know of any plum trees up there. He said, oh, hell, there's lots and lots of them up there. I said, now, aren't you confused? Them old possum haw trees up there look exactly like a plum tree. He said, I reckon that's what it is. But he didn't know it. He said he didn't know it. And now, he was a great hunter.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, and he had all his land down there around Silver Springs, and he planted feed for his turkeys and
cool. And
looked out the deer. He said he had this Presbyterian preacher. What the devil's name up there in the game? He is a big hunter, too.
Yes.
And a fine man.
Yeah.
The old man Jim invited him to go down and hunt with him, and he said he had one old turkey gobbler. He said he was saving him. He wanted to let one of his best friends shoot him.
Yeah.
And so he got the doctor, that preacher out there, and he told him, he said, now I can call him.
Preacher Gordon.
Gordon, yeah, Preacher Gordon. And he said, I can call him, but he says he's pretty skittish. He says, I'm going to put you in a blind and I'm going to call him. And he says, I did. And says, I called him up there and the preacher got this little old anxious, made the slightest little move and said, that old turkey took off like that. Said he told the preacher, says, hell, I told you to be still. But Dr. Gordon was and he is a fine man. If he ever meets you, he'll know you.
Yeah.
Wherever he sees you, and he'll speak to you.
Yeah.
Him and old man Ed Rush. Old man Ed was a big quail hunter.
Yeah.
And he invited the preacher to come out there. Preacher told us, he said, he got out there and said, Ed wasn't at himself, and he looked like he's nervous. He acted like he's nervous or something. Then finally I just stopped. He said, Ed, what's the matter with you? He says, now I'm going to be honest with you. He says, when I go hunting and things don't go right, I cuss. And he says, I'm just trying to keep from cussing here before you. Preacher says, I told him. He said, now if you want to cuss, he says, you just go ahead and cuss all you want to. He says, I can listen to just as much as you can cuss. He says, you ain't hurting me a bit in the world. He made old man his shit.
But old man Jim Taylor, now he was his children were your age?
No.
His grandchildren.
He married twice. He was married twice. But I don't think he had any children by his last wife. And I don't believe he had but two by his first wife. It was the girl that married, no, that was Ellie Collins' kid. Ellie Collins married one of his daughters.
Yeah.
And his boy, I don't think he ever got married. He went all through one war and come back to McIntosh.
Yeah.
Was killed in an automobile accident, I believe.
Now, how, Ellie Collins older than you?
No, about my age.
Yeah.
And Mr. Rainey, he showed his age, I reckon, a little more than I showed mine.
Yeah.
And I was always talking to the old man Rainey.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd call him old man to his face.
Yeah.
And one day he said, Tuck, how old are you? And I told him when I was born and what date and all. He said, now I want you to quit calling me old man. He said, by God, you're 3 months older than I am. But Lord, you're talking about somebody who can talk. That man can talk.
Old man Rainey.
Yeah, Lamar Rainey. He runs a big, he and his boys run a big truck stop just out on this edge of Ocala.
Oh, you mean they still run it?
Yeah.
Truck stop this side of Ocala on 441? 301.
No, it's west of 301.
Yeah.
You know, as 301 goes into Ocala, it makes a bend. Well, the old county road, I reckon I'd call it.
Yeah.
It's got a number, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It goes right by there, and it sits right in the fork. 301 goes that way, and the old county road, and it's a barber shop and a garage and I don't know what all right in there.
Uh-huh.
You got a nice, and they're doing good. But his, I don't know, he's got four boys, I believe. And the one that worked out here with us in the cattle, he was just as fine a boy as you want to see. And he's easy to get along with. And if there's any work to be done, he did his share.
Uh-huh.
Well, after old man Rainey got out of the cattle business, he went down there. And this boy had some disease, I don't know, it affected him all over.
Yeah.
He couldn't talk and he couldn't. Well, he could hear. Now I went down there one time after he'd gotten better. He didn't recognize me for a long time.
Yeah.
But old man Rainey said he could go out there and tally up that gas, keep books just as good as anybody could. And he's gradually getting better.
Well, now, after Mr. Rainey left up here, that wasn't long after you came. He wasn't up here long.
No. Let me see. Clarence Ryle farmed out there 4 or 5 years. He was up here 8 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And then when Bailey come in, he didn't stay long. He's still supposed to be the head of this thing.
Yeah.
And when he moved his cattle out, he says, Tuck, I'll see you in a little while. And he says, I'm going to move some old cows back up here. And I hadn't seen the rascal since. I went down there one time. What happened? This old man, Perry, over here, Kirk Davis bought 8 acres of land right between his places. He's got a place on this side and one on the other side. And he'd planted some pasture grass back. This 80 on this side of old man Perry's has got a big swamp between it, and you can't get from one field to the other without going through Davis's field or something. And he asked Mr. Davis, he says, if he had a bulldozer at the time. He says, Mr. Davis, if you let me have a little strip of land back on the back side there, where I can walk my cows from one field to the other. He says, I'll push out a good lane there, and put a 3-strand barbed wire fence through there. And Davis says, well, it wouldn't take up much of his patch. It wasn't no good for a patch anyway. He told him, he says, go ahead. Instead of old man Perry doing like he told me he was going to do, he started way down here and made an angle, which took in 4 or 5 acres. David heard no. He couldn't do that. But anyhow, Perry took up a fence. Then he planted some hay grass over there. And I believe it was G.P. Lightner, Lawrence Lightner, some of them down there. And God made arrangements for them to cut the hay, and he asked Davis if he could go back and forth through his field to cut the hay and haul it. Davis said, no. He says, we made an agreement. You didn't stick up to your part. He said, you can't haul through there. So.
Now that's the way I get along with my neighbors.
Yeah. Well, show you what kind of man old man Perry was. Instead of him coming to me, I'm a caretaker. He goes down to the office in Ocala, and Alec Collins' boy is head in the office. Alec had a stroke, and he's about out of the business. He went down and asked the boy if he could cut past the fence over the back of his place and come around on this side of Davis's place and cut another gap. And the boy told him, all right. Well, I didn't know anything about it. Meantime, Coon Young was cutting the company's timber up there. He had a caterpillar he pulled logs with, and old man Perry had took his caterpillar and knocked some stumps down a little bush beside the road, and I went over and saw it. Well, I just thought it was Young. Finally, I found out it was old man Perry. Well, I didn't go to Perry. I went down to the office, and I asked that Young Collins if he'd give him permission to do that. He said, yeah. And I thought he would have come to me. I said, if he had come to me, I'd have come down here and asked you about it, called it. And I said, it looked to me like somebody was stepping over my head a little bit. He says, I know it. He says, I'm to blame for it. He says, I was wrong. He says, he'll never get permission to do that again. And later on, my son's land and Perry joined over here on the section line. And it goes through a little swamp down there. He called me and asked me if I'd meet him over there and show him a corner post, and I told him yeah. So then I showed him the one over here, back of this little old field. He said, now I want to know if you will help me put a fence through there. I said, no. So he said, well, I don't know the line. I said, well, you know where the corners are. If you take that bulldozer and knock out a few of them trees in there, you can see it. And I said, Mr. Perry, I'm not able to help in the first place. And I said, in the second place, this is my son's land. You had to see him. Well, he went in there, and he's a railroad engineer, you know. He's one of these, he'd have it done if he could. He put some niggas back in there.
Yeah.
They started off at the corner and went up straight a piece, and then it turned in on Lawrence Roberts land and kind of went around out of the swamp, so to speak. Well, I didn't know about it. I didn't go down there very often. And finally, I found it, and I told Lawrence Roberts about it. And he went to old man Perry about it. He said, well, I was, and when he come out on this side, he had had an acre of Lawrence Roberts land fenced off. And Lawrence Roberts told him he had to take it up and straighten it. And he promised him three times, but he never did do it. So we went up out on this side and took the fence down and put it on the line to the swamp, and then we went and joined it. Old swamp wasn't no good for nothing anyway. And he never did like me after that, but I couldn't see why he, because I wasn't going in heaven and it wasn't nothing to me.
You have done just a little of everything, haven't you?
Well,
you worked with cattle all sorts of ways, all kinds of cattle.
You know.
Done that truck farming, that's the hardest work, isn't it?
Yeah,
now, how did you combine cattle with truck farming?
Well, I'd let my cows go, so to speak, till they laid by my crop, and then I'd get out and fool the cattle.
Yeah. Well, now, that people didn't do that, did they?
No, yeah.
I mean, a fella that's going to do this truck farming, he'll do that during the season,
yeah.
And then he'll wait till next year and do some more.
Yeah. A regular truck
What you're doing, you just work summer and winter.
Yeah, trying to make some. Old man Zetra over here now, he truck farm, all his boys truck farm.
Yeah.
But they'd have hands to do their work, field work, and they'd be in the woods looking after the cattle. See, way back then, all the country pretty near was open.
Yeah.
And old man Zetra, one time, he had cows in four different counties.
Is that right?
And how he managed to do all of it himself, I'll never know, but he did it.
Yeah.
And I went over, honest to God, I went over and helped him butcher. Well, you know, when you butcher, you know you're going to get bloody and dirty and nasty. And I have seen him come down to that pen with blue jeans or overalls, any kind of pants. They'd have one patch on another. And I've seen him down there, and he'd stoop over, and his whole brows would be sticking out. He'd open those cows, and he'd get the towel off the price, and then he'd get down there and get it every bit off the guts.
Yeah.
And dry it out for 5 cents a pound.
Yeah.
And he could have made more money sitting down whittling with a stick. But that's how close he was. He bought out the Smith Brothers cattle. That's Cedric and, well, it was old Cedric and Clarence then. Young Cedric was just a boy.
Yeah.
And he got all of them but two, and he couldn't pin them. So we was over there one day, and he said, I got two old cows over here. And he said, you reckon there's any chance you and me pin them? I said, I don't know, but we can try it. And I says, we can't pin them, can't we catch them? He says, I don't know, they're pretty wild. So we got them over on the edge of the lake. They didn't want to go, they wanted to go everywhere but the right way. And I had a pretty good horse. One of them started in the lake, I said, you want them caught? He said, yeah. And I caught her before she got in swimming water. He had a little old damn grass rope. And we got out on the hill and tied her to a tree with the other, and she went on out in the lake. And I said, do you reckon she'll come back? He said, maybe. So we got out there and hid, and finally she decided she'd come back. Well, when she come, there was 100 yards, I reckon, that they could wade for, they had to start swimming. Well, when she got out pretty close to the hill, I sailed in on my horse, and I caught her. We tied her to a tree. Well, it's getting pretty late. He had an old truck, but he'd always go in, and he wouldn't hardly put that truck in the woods unless it was a good open place. He'd take a two-horse wagon. He didn't have a block and tack, and he had old three-prong derrick. He would lay the cow down and butch it and lay those things down, one in the back and two in the front. And you'd get there and raise that cow up, keep inching it up. And you had the spikes, real spikes drove in. You put your bar between the hindquarters, down at the knees, raise that cow and butcher. We butcher those two cows. And I think he's paying me $2.50 a day then. Me and my horse. But the day before, we was just talking. Some said about syrup, and I said, you know, my boy, he's as much syrup or more than the rest of the family. And I says, I'm out, sir. Well, the next day when I got through butchering, he paid me. And he had $2 more. Here's another one of those fellas. Take a dollar bill and rub it to see if it's too big. He handed me $2 extra. And I said, what's this for? And he says, well, those old cows are pretty hard to handle. And says, you had to go in the water, and I just figured it's worth it. I said, no. When I go out on a cow drive, anything that happened goes. He stuck it back in his pocket. We got through, and I started to come on home. He said, oh, by the way, wait a minute. He went to the wagon, he had a little half a gallon bucket of syrup, he'd give it to me. He said, take this to your boy.
Now, that's a side that I don't know. I don't know any of those zip
trowels. Yeah.
Now, that's the end of Channel 1 over. The end of Channel 1 over. That's the end of Channel 1 over. This is just a little past 900, 915, 920. And this is the end of Channel 1 over. This is the end of Channel 1 over on that fine talk, 2.5 hours on the porch of Tuck Mac. That's Thursday afternoon, the 2nd of April, 1970. Just him and me. Ms. Mac had gone into town. And just us and dogs. This is 9:30 now, the end of Channel 1 over.